Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez and my Cree name is Funrara.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and my Cree name is Chalamet.
And I'm Neil Miller, and my Cree name is Prague Rock.
Really? And when you write these all out, Niels is the best.
Niels is definitely the best.
We are here to talk about Captain Marvel, and surprise, HBO actually did give us more footage from the last season of Game of Thrones, and we're a Game of Thrones podcast. Or is it all from... It probably is. But tune in to find out later on this episode. We're going to talk about the Game of Thrones trailer first.
And we're not putting it behind a paywall. It's just here for you, the
people. Of
course,
yes.
You have to sit through at least one ad, though.
fair. And then at the second part, we're going to have a calm Captain Marvel segment where we're not going to be giving away any of this movie's twists, and it does have them, so we're going to, you know, put some plot cans over our glowing fists. Oh man, I'm already spoiling it. All right, and then the second half of our Captain Marvel discussion will be our stormy half, which will include all discussions of the plot of Captain Marvel and its post-credit scenes, and maybe if it has anything to do with anything else. You know how this goes, but maybe you don't. Welcome to Storm of Spoilers off season tour.
Plot cans this.
I love that all I'm not even sure. Wait. Oh, no, I get it now. I was like, I've seen the movie, and I'm not sure I get that one. But no, I get it.
I'm pretty sure this podcast will be fun for people both before and after they've seen the movie, because there's going to be lots of that.
We'll put our spoiler dampening gloves on.
That's right.
There you go.
Well, you know,
that's like a Jean Grey or a Rogue sort of thing.
Yeah, we'll like take some pink ribbons off our eyes and we'll be exposed, but it's no big surprise. It's fine.
Anyway, we'll then be doing a bonus segment this Friday for our Patreon subscribers. If you want to join them, you could go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers and subscribe at the small council or maester level to get those episodes. We will be discussing what Game of Thrones episodes we will be watching together for our little Slack Patreon group before the season starts off officially. While we're still talking about Game of Thrones, this is your weekly reminder that Con of Thrones is coming up this July 12th through 14th. In Nashville. Tickets are on sale now. If you use code STORM at checkout, you get $5 off. Go to conofthrones.net. Get that figured out. We're all going to be there. People from the cast are going to be there. We're going to have things to talk about. That's the worst pitch for
there will
a
be
very
debates.
Exciting event.
There will be onesies. I already have one Game of Thrones headband.
Neil's going to be singing Shallow from
allegedly
the Oscar-winning Shallow. Allegedly. Decisions have consequences, Neil.
I love that the first year of Con of Thrones is like, Neil's going to go and he's going to find love. And now it's like, Neil's going to go and he just needs someone to sing karaoke with him.
Yeah. Neil's going to go and wants meaningful eye contact, 2020. All right, Joanna, do we have any reviews this week?
Oh my God, this is my section. Do you guys want to vamp for me while I pull up a review? I know we have one, at least one.
Sure.
Did we talk about the code STORM at checkout with the Con of Thrones thing?
I think we did, but okay. If that's code STORM, it gets you $5 off at checkout at conofthrones.net. We will be, of course, doing our Game of Thronesies, which is the word onesies on the end of Game of Thrones, where we all wear onesies to a panel, or maybe the whole final day. We get
I think
super
this
tired.
This year, I might go for more of a romper situation.
Oh, because it got really warm.
It got really moist last year.
Oh, bud.
That was an accurate, I'm sure, but unfortunate word to describe your situation.
It was obviously it's very warm in a fleece onesie. So what about like a Taika Waititi style
romper
situation?
Yeah.
But like a Game of Thrones. This has to exist, or...
Remember when I asked you to vamp and Neil went to moist? I apologize. I'll never ask you to vamp again. All right, let's talk about some reviews. All right. So we have at least, yeah, we have one review sitting on top of that bad review we got last week. But if you guys want to leave us more reviews and bury that one star review, that would be delightful. Anyway, this is from ALMCA3344, 5 stars. Yay, so good, exclamation mark. Yay. I love this podcast and I've appreciated these terrific hosts and their insightful yet fun pop culture talk for a long time. I recently started a Game of Thrones rewatch and have been so happy that all the old Storm of Spoilers episodes are still available so I can have these three lovely people as my rewatch companions. The off-season tour is just as delightful. Also, oh, no. Also, Joanna Robinson is a treasure. Thank you for always sharing your smart and important opinions, even though sometimes people are mean and lame. Dave and Neil are also good dudes. P.S. Got a light. Please give us all your Twin Peaks, The Return theories ASAP. So thank you, ALMCA3344, for invoking one of the creepiest episodes of television ever, which was Twin Peaks episode in The Return with that Got a Light joke. We were talking about Twin Peaks theories in the Storm Spoiler Slack, which you can join if you become a Patreon at the $5 level. No, the $1 level. $1, right? Gets you into our Slack.
Yeah.
$1 a month.
Joanna's like the Mark Frost of the relationship, and then she's like, yeah, let's talk about Twin Peaks. And I'm like the David Lynch of the relationship, where I'm like, I want to talk about Twin Peaks, but I want 18 uninterrupted hours at a budget level of my choosing. So we'll get to that episode at some point.
All right. But yeah, we did see some good Twin Peaks talk, in the Storm Spoiler Slack this week after mentioning it on the podcast. Thank you for that review. Please leave us a review. We really like them. Thanks so much. Bye.
Neil.
Yes.
You're up.
Oh, does that mean it's time?
You're the blank, brother.
Time to go storm chasing.
Pew, 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 pew. The first and the last. And you're in my way.
So here we go. One movie, show, story, idea, whatever you got, whatever you're chasing this week. For me, it is that I watched the first few episodes of the Amazon Prime series Hannah, which is adapted from the Joe Wright movie of the same name, starring Eric Bana and Saoirse Ronan. And here's what I've learned. It's pretty good. It's entertaining. But if you replace Eric Bana and Saoirse Ronan with Joel Kinnaman and any good young actress, and the young actress who's in this movie or in this show is fine. She's
Samantha Morton's daughter.
Oh, really? I didn't know
that.
Uh-huh. I don't know. She's pretty good. I don't know. It's just different. It really does feel like the TV version, which is fine. But I have not yet found a hook to it, and I'm about 4 episodes in. I've not yet found the hook that's going to draw me in and say this thing is worth, like, this story is worth revisiting beyond just having more time than, say, the movie did.
Can I ask a clarifying question about that? In the episodes, have you seen any indication that it's going to go beyond the movie's plot in any sort of meaningful way?
Not yet.
Okay.
So it feels very sort of in step, and they filled in a few little blanks, but it feels like they just were like, well, let's just do this over again, but we'll do the TV version. Right. And that's never a good start, but I look forward to reporting in on the rest of the season when I get around to it, hopefully before I have to rewatch Game of Thrones.
My prediction is that you're not going to finish it.
I mean, I'll come back to it eventually.
And that's not a knock on you. I just think life is too short for Hannah the TV version. Here's where I went off Hannah the TV version. When I was at TCA, it's Murray Enos, that's how you pronounce her name, right? Who was also in The Killing of Joel Kinnaman and plays the Kate Blanchett character.
Yes.
She said that there wasn't as much of a fairy tale element to this as there was to the film. And I was like,
what are you even doing?
Yeah, why am I even here? No thanks. So
there's no big bad wolf mouse showdown. Right. Then what's the point of doing Hannah?
Yeah, well, there's no evil stepmother, then I'm not here for it. So no gracias.
Yeah. And not only, I don't mean to pick on her, but, you can really tell just the difference. She's a perfectly okay actress. But it was Cate Blanchett in the movie.
Well, I think Marie Enos is like a tremendous actress. But I think, she said she was playing it like much differently. She's playing it, I think more than anyone else in the cast, she's really doing a different take on this, which might be wise if you're trying to take on a Cate Blanchett character. You're like, guess what? It's just going to be super different. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, I'm not interested. I love Hannah. I think it might be my favorite Joe Wright movie. It's a tie.
It's a great movie.
And Hannah and Atonement. But like, yeah, I don't think I need this. And Amazon's trying really hard. Amazon is like, hey, you, speaking of Captain Marvel, Amazon's like, hey, you girl who writes for Vanity Fair, who likes genre stuff. They have been like hitting me so hard with the pitches. And I was like, guys, I cannot. I'm not here for it. Anyway.
So, then you should know that you're not missing anything.
Great. Thank you.
So anyway, what are you chasing this week, Joanna?
Sorry, I didn't mean to railroad your segment.
No, that's felt like a natural end.
I've been very, very stressed out, guys, because I don't know if you've heard.
Just the trill of the laugh on the end of that. I'm very sad for you right now, but also laughing. Oh.
I don't know if you heard that Game of Thrones is coming back, but it is, and also Captain Marvel, and also Avengers Endgame, and also Star Wars Celebration, and also South by Southwest. So, the good news is for all of us is that I will be hanging out with Neil in like 2 days. So that's immediately relaxing, honestly. Neil is such a calming presence, but,
that's in 2 days? Oh, no.
I know.
Now I'm stressed.
But I was needing to like relieve some tension, and like I've been rewatching Game of Thrones and doing all this stuff, and I just needed to watch something that had nothing to do with anything that I was responsible for. So I binged some sitcoms on Hulu. And there's sitcoms that I'd been meaning to watch and hadn't. One is AP Bio, which is on NBC, and one is Single Parents, which is on ABC. And they both have really good casts. And I don't know. I really like AP Bio is trying kind of hard to do like a community thing. Dan Harmon's Community. And it stars Glenn Howerton of It's Always Sunny as like this Harvard professor who comes to teach biology at a high school, but like is not interested in teaching biology. He's actually interested in like wrecking his rival's life and stuff like that. And so he's got like this whole, it's a little School of Rocky too. Like he's got this whole like overachiever class of like nerd kids who are lovely. And he's trying to like enlist them into sabotaging this, like man who he feels like has stolen his life. So Patton Oswalt's in it. Paula Pell, who's so great, is in it. Anyway, it's like, it's really just like a fun, relaxing sort of show. And then Single Parents, is Taryn Killam and Leighton Meester, and the brother from Everybody Loves Raymond, whose name I can never remember.
Isn't his name Brad?
Brad something. Tall.
Yeah, big, Brad something.
Big tall Brad, from
Big Old Brad.
So it's just about a like group of single parents who are helping each other like raise their kids and stuff like that. And it's very like, there's actually a British show that has a similar conceit. And, you know, I feel like it was slightly taken from that, but it's, executive produced, created by Liz Merriweather, who did New Girl. So it's just like a very charming light. And if you like watching good adult actors who you like interacting with cute child actors, then this is a show for you. It's not like it's sharper than like that sounds very syrupy. It's sharper than that because, you know, Liz Merriweather is a sharp lady, but, it's also co-executive produced by JJ Philbin, who is married to Michael Schur. So like all the like love stories that you,
it's in the extended Schurverse.
Yeah, it is in the extended Schurverse. I'm going to call it that. So anyway, those are two sitcoms that I really endorse if you just want something to like really kind of turn your mind off, but not all the way off, if that makes sense. So there you go.
If you need to chill.
Chill. Just chill.
Just chill. Dave, are you chill?
All right.
What are you chasing?
Well, no, I'm not chill in the best possible way. So I'm going to talk about Star Trek Discovery Season 2. This is not about whether or not you should pay to get CBS All Access, which it's on. That's between you and your god, be it Tomato or Rolhorio, the God of Light Oreos, Lord of Light Oreos,
whatever food based god to which you pray,
or one of the traditional gods that have churches and synagogues and temples around the world, whatever,
or one of the Westerosi gods, who knows?
Ask them whether you should pay for CBS All Access. I'm just enjoying Star Trek Discovery Season 2, which has found that balance that the first season was unable to find between episodic and serialized. It's a little bit clunky. Basically, Spock, everybody knows Spock, has gone crazy. And has started hallucinating this red angel that shows up at these random spots in space. So what happens is the Discovery, which is now borrowing the Enterprise's Captain Pike, is traveling to these red spots, and at each red spot, there's like a problem to solve that's very classic Star Trek-y, like a alien race that's being repressed by another alien race, or a religion that's built around this red angel, but also the town doesn't know about space travel, so they can't be like, no, this is a Federation matter, and break their god. You know, all these fun things. With the exception of one episode that had to tie up the Klingon part of season one and get Tyler back on the Discovery. Sorry, everybody. Like I said, this is for people who are already watching Discovery. This isn't going to make sense to any of you. But there's not an official Star Trek podcast I could go on anymore, so this is what you get. The cool thing about the upcoming episode is not only do we have Spock back on the show, and he's, a little bit mentally unstable, and it was revealed that Spock has basically the Vulcan version of dyslexia, which is interesting in terms of neurotypical disorders being portrayed on Star Trek. We're going to go to Talos IV, which anybody who's a fan of the original series knows it's the planet that served as the location for both.
Wait. Is there a Talos in Captain Marvel too?
Talos in Captain Marvel.
This is very confusing now.
So Talos IV was the planet they went to in both the Cage, the original pilot for Star Trek that had Captain Pike, not Captain Kirk, and the Menagerie, the episode of Star Trek they did that basically used the unaired pilot like a clip show. So the whole idea of like the canon around Talos IV is really interesting. But like, if you know anything about Star Trek and like ever seen any weird Star Trek things, you've probably seen Captain Kirk with a ripped shirt wrestling that lizard man. And you've seen these aliens that have giant like testicles for heads. Those are the guys that live on Talos IV. Those guys are going to be on Star Trek Discovery this week. I'm super psyched. That's what I want in a weird Star Trek show. Just episodic fun week to week with light moral lessons. But like I was saying before, Spock is not in a good place on this show. He has gone through some traumatic experiences, and life is stressful, guys. So I want to tell you guys about a service that can maybe help you deal with that stress.
Okay.
I, of course, am talking about Talkspace.
Oh, okay. Is this the thing that's going to help me get through all my stress, pre-throne stress as well?
It can help you get through any stress. You just need someone to talk to sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people like us, you know, are physically apart from people. And maybe it's tough to, you know, see your friends and family all the time. And maybe you just need somebody to, you know, to bounce some ideas off of. That's what Talkspace helps you with. So it's a service that provides you with a therapist that you could have over the phone. You send your therapist unlimited text, audio, picture, or video messages from anywhere at any time, and you'll hear back daily, 5 days per week, weekends, something else. All you need is a computer with an internet connection or the Talkspace mobile app. You can send all your media to your Talkspace therapist. You don't have to visit multiple therapists in order to find the right one.
Here's my favorite part about Talkspace, because I'm a huge advocate for going to therapy. Personally, and everyone, I think, should go to therapy. But there's a huge barrier of entry there for a lot of people, because you're like, how do I find the right one? You have to find the right one. And what I like with Talkspace is, like, you don't have to go to visit multiple therapists in order to find the right one. They have a matching process that takes your unique preferences into account to find someone whose style and expertise matches your needs. And if you want to switch therapists because you're like, this one is not working for me, you can do so at any time at no extra cost. Taking care of mental health, like, it should not be more work than it already is for all of us to take care of yourself.
So I also, this is, I think, important for people who are, you know, already advocates of therapy. Talkspace has started dealing with a teen service They offer counseling for teens ages 13 and up. They could also message a licensed counselor from their phone or computer anywhere, anytime. That doesn't mean, like, appointments and scheduling hassles are the problems of a parent or you, a 13-year-old person who just wants somebody to talk to. Talkspace can help you with that. It's also much more affordable than getting a face-to-face session. About 1 month of therapy on Talkspace is the equivalent of a single face-to-face average session monetarily. So, if you want to go to Talkspace and use one of their 3,000 licensed therapists who are experienced in addressing the challenges we all face.
Talkspace has more than 3,000 licensed therapists who are experienced in addressing the challenges we all face. To match with your perfect therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, go to Talkspace.com. Make sure to use the code SOS to get $45 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's SOS and Talkspace.com.
Can help me through all this Game of Thrones stuff.
Yeah, so let's talk Game of Thrones the trailer, right?
The thing that's currently causing us the most stress.
So,
are we doing frame by frame, guys? Should we do it? We can do it.
Oh man, I mean, it's not that long of a trailer. We could do frame by frame.
Let's do it.
Well, I didn't know I had to bring it up, but I'm gonna bring it up now.
Can't be that hard to find.
Do you guys know? You guys know how to like slow the frame rate down on a YouTube video, right? Kim Renfro had to teach me, so I just wanted to make sure.
Well, not only that, but that you and Kim Renfro told everybody how to do it on a still watching Westworld, I believe. So.
We did. What
speed are we going for here?
So if I would go to 0.25.
All right. 0.25.
0.25.
Let's crank up the HD-ness.
Yeah, crank up the HD, but don't
crank up the brightness on your monitor.
I would not turn on the volume because it's just going to sound creepy. So hopefully we remember when people were talking. Are you ready?
All right. Yeah. Lowest settings. Here we go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play. All right. So
HBO logo.
Yeah, and then these first few seconds are like Arya looking scared, and that's already a very powerful image.
She looks kind of young in this. I was fooled at first. I was like, is this a flashback or like Arya remembering a childhood thing? But then you see her run and her face is, you know, similarly messed up. And so I guess
it's
current.
She's got a big ass wound on her forehead. And
Entertainment Weekly making such a big deal about this being Maisie Williams' first fight suddenly makes this being part of the climax of episode 3 a lot more likely, I think. That like Arya's
climax
last
of episode 3?
Okay, we missed something already, so let's hit pause.
Alright, there's Davos watching.
We have to hit pause?
We're hitting pause.
Okay, at 11 seconds. Got it.
Dave,
okay.
I did not read the illustrious, incredible James Hibbert on the trailer today, so what did he have to say about the fight scene in the first frame?
Well, they were like, isn't it interesting that this is Maisie Williams' first fight scene.
First
and she
battle
had to train.
Scene.
First battle scene, and she had to train, you know, to like for all these 11 like long nights. So yeah. I'm thinking, like, because this trailer is so Arya focused and because of the tense way that it starts, this is highlighting climax of episode 3 is much more Arya and maybe dagger combat centric. Than like we thought. So if we're going with the Helm's Deep analogy, Arya's the person that like has to go back inside when things get really bad because she is like powerful and everybody else needs to be bodies holding the
this
line.
This is a really interesting point. And if we remember back to what was it Matt Shackman that did the Loot Train episode, right? Or what? No, Daniel Sackheim.
Don't call it that. Shackman did do that episode, but don't call it that.
So in that battle episode, I remember from,
spoils
I think, the commentary
war.
Track, Spoils of War, yes.
Yeah.
They talked about battles, like the best big battles having a perspective. So like Battle of the Bastards is mostly from Jon's perspective. And then you have that battle, which is from, you know, like two or three different perspectives. So I think that it would be very interesting for them to use the first battle where Arya is involved to make her sort of like the central piece of that. So that's fascinating to me.
Well, it's also good from a plot. I think Sapochnik has said in the Entertainment Week, one of the Entertainment Weekly stories that like actually that they're handling multiple perspectives while trying to keep exactly what you're talking about, Neil.
Yeah. Like,
while
trying to keep they would it have anchored, to.
But like that they have to shift. Cause I think we'll see throughout this trailer, we think most of this footage is from episode 3. There's some episode 1 and maybe 2 stuff in there too, but like mostly episode 3 would be my guess. And, I think that, you know, we'll see a lot of different perspectives represented, like that Davos shot along the ramparts sort of thing
that we're on right now. Good job bringing us back.
Yeah.
Thanks. Here we go.
All right.
We're going to start again at Joanna's call.
5, 4, 3. This is a great idea. 3, 2, 1, play. All right. So Davos walking along the snowy ramparts of Winterfell, and then Arya is still running.
Wait.
And
Yeah, Arya's still running. Oh, I was like, oh shit, did I miss Davos?
No. And then we've got Varys down in the crypt doing a very Helm's Deep thing. Gilly's there too with young Sam by Rob's statue in the crypt. Arya's still running.
Arya's running from what? Maybe something that's purposely not there.
Yeah, we think that they may have digitally erased what's chasing her. Whether it's
They may have digitally erased a bunch of stuff in this thing.
Yeah. And so Arya basically has said at the front of this trailer, like, I've seen death and like death has worn many faces and I'm eager to meet this one. And she's holding up an obsidian dagger, not any of the weapons that she used before. So she's talking about the Night King there. But I like that juxtaposition of like her being calm and confident that maybe happens in like episode 1, 2 and her completely unraveling. Yeah.
Do you think that's going to freak out her brother, cousin? John, that she's
no,
super
I think it's,
calm.
I think it's meant to freak us out. So it's like a Hulk moment at the beginning of Infinity War, where it's like we think we know this badass, fearless warrior, and then she's gonna see some White Walkers and be like, "Oh shit!"
All right, so we just saw the Kraken. I'm gonna pause this again. Are you ready to pause?
Okay, yeah. Paused.
All right, we talked over the Kraken fleet.
Oh, I paused on Tormund
bringing the gold cloaks over to Westeros to serve the Lannisters.
Right, and that's Harry Strickland, the back of his head. That's a new character that we've not met before who's in season 8. His name is Harry Strickland, and did you say gold cloaks or gold companies? Gold company. Golden Company. And they are like, so some people are like, is that Jamie? Blah, blah. It's not Jamie. That is Harry Strickland, new character, head of these mercenaries. And, there's a fun fan theory that Dario is part of the Golden Company and we get to see him one more time before it all goes down. I don't hate it. He's not the leader. Harry Strickland is the leader, and that's a book character, Harry Strickland. But, you know, Dario might be among their ranks, possibly.
Yeah, I don't hate it either. Why not?
Why not?
You only get one shot at this. Just do it all.
Yeah, yeah. Give Michelle Guzman one more check. And then the scene we're paused on, which is Beric and Tormund.
That's my fucking guy right there.
And Ed and the Flaming Sword. Do you think this is Castle Black or do you think it's Winterfell?
That's a good question. I'm just glad to see that they're in a lower place. It's dark, so I'm guessing, they're in a basement somewhere, which is much better than where we left them. So that's really all I can focus on right now. I wish I had more to say. I don't know what those walls look like. It's probably Castle Black, or maybe they meet Ed at a different castle. I don't know. You would assume they're headed for Winterfell, right?
Go ahead.
I always keep in mind that somebody said that one of the rumors that we've gotten about this season is that the map to travel time ratio is going to make no sense. So I do think that they end up at Winterfell by episode 3.
If not earlier, for sure.
Here's the one thing I will say about their costuming is they look more battle ready than they were at the end of last season. Like Beric's got like armor on. And Tormund's wearing like thick layers. So this could be like that same night shoot battle. You know, they might just be going and doing something else for the battle.
But yeah, I think definitely like our three guys like flee Castle Black, it falls and they come to Winterfell. I think that's something we will see, whether or not this is Winterfell or them still at Castle Black. I don't know. But I think we're going to see them fleeing like the
it's
wall.
It's just good to see. Just good to see him.
It's good to see your boy. All right, are you ready to press play again?
Yes.
Yep.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play. All right.
So that sword really is still.
Okay.
Slow motion.
And then we've got Bran talking to John and, or to
you know
Sam.
What that looks like? Did you see the breath? Like that, I feel like that's
the
moment.
The word sex written in the dust.
That's the moment, the moment where they realize that like the White Walkers are here.
Ooh, yes. Ooh, good I call. Like that. The horns interrupt them or something like
that. Right. And you see Sam, it get really cold because they're inside. Why would they be that cold? I don't know. Or they're
all
in
right. Happy Cersei, weird Qyburn.
Yeah. And then we see
random Molestown kid.
Well, yeah, which is an echo of the pilot where Bran is climbing the ramparts watching King.
They really
Robert
are just
going to
just shot for shot.
Shot for shot it if they can. And then we've got Daenerys and Jon riding into Winterfell.
I love this. They're gangster.
And then we've got
that
Sansa,
is power couple vibes.
Sansa looking at Drogon. I'm not 100% convinced that this is, and then Rhaegal right behind him. I'm not convinced that this is Sansa's first time seeing a dragon. It might be, or it might be something else, and we'll get to that in a second. But we definitely.
I'm
see
with
them.
Your second thing. If we're voting because of the show right here,
yeah, it's the second thing. It's okay. Definitely the second thing.
All right. Then we get Daenerys visiting Jon down in the crypts, which is, again, an echo of the pilot, right? They're in front of Lyanna's statue.
It tweeted earlier today that this is the moment where she just gets you someone that looks at you like she just found out she's your aunt and she's kind of into it, but you're not sure how you feel
anyway.
About it. Because you're like, you were raised differently.
And she's like, you're a Targaryen.
We have Gendry.
Gratuitous.
Gendry overseeing the forges, Jorah, and Grey Worm and Missandei sort of like getting ready for battle. One kiss before leaving.
I will say this. I don't know who Jacob Anderson's agent is.
Yeah.
But whatever they did negotiating what Grey Worm gets to do in Game of Thrones season 8, so far they're winning because he looks awesome in both of the shots in this trailer.
All right, so we saw Brienne hacking with fire behind her on the ramparts. We saw Jaime yelling with Pod right next to him. We said,
Wait, hold on. Can we go back for a second?
Yeah, let's pause.
To the throne room.
Okay.
Let's pause on this throne. What's going on here? Somebody's in front of her.
Yeah.
I think it's
Harry Strickland, but I could be wrong. Based on how light what he's wearing is.
But he looks big.
Does he look big? I think he just looks like he has a gold cloak. Like
okay.
Like the same guy who's on the boat. And then Euron next to him.
I was like, who is that? What's going on there?
I would say it's Harry Strickland would be my guess, but you know, who knows?
Okay.
So Euron saying like, hey, I brought you the Golden Company or something.
I brought you these dudes.
Yeah.
We're ready to fight.
And then we've got this shot, which I think is very important. Cersei is drinking, which means probably she's lost her baby, would be my guess.
No, I mean, well.
And no,
or she just heard that somebody died.
Or she heard that Jamie's dead. But no, I mean, I think either way she's lost her baby because she's drinking wine. And
right, because
whether
that context clues, they set that up last season.
They did,
so.
Yeah.
Mm.
Then we got the dragons.
Oh, here's just
flying.
A shot of two dragons just chilling, flying.
Flying with definitely nobody.
Just definitely only
them.
One rider there.
Yeah. Then we've got that shot we've seen before of Arya looking at the dragons, probably.
This feels like more of an approach shot, like, cause you see like people scrambling to get ready behind them. Like, whereas the Sansa thing, it's like, you feel like maybe Sansa's just out there having a think.
Grey Worm gets his helmet on.
Grey Worm. He's killing it.
Jon is in front of the Weirwood tree, echo of Ned. The Hound is near fire. Jaime is saying that he is swore to fight for the living, and that's what he wants to do. He looks like he's at Winterfell.
He actually
Jon
doesn't.
And some men are charging.
Didn't we talk about Jaime maybe being at the Twins?
We can talk. Yeah, we can talk about that in a second.
I feel like that might be him at the Twins.
Jon and Daenerys approach Drogon and Rhaegal. Definitely going to fly them.
Mom and Dad hanging out with the kids.
We missed the horse feet charging forward with several obvious direwolf feet alongside
maybe
them.
Maybe direwolf feet. I don't know if that's obvious. We see Arya fighting. Daenerys
so Arya's the tracking shot.
Yeah.
That's my guess, is that
Tyrion
battle.
Tyrion looks up, a dragon breathes fire.
Ooh, what if we just go back and forth across the rampart? That's the tracking shot.
Brienne
to the left, Arya to the right.
That really did look like that's going to be the tracking shot because you need to think about Bronn's tracking shot, Jon Snow's tracking shot. It's all that big fluid movement. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we've got Pod and Brienne and a bunch of soldiers.
Literally everybody here is about to die.
The Vale and Jorah.
All men are toast.
Getting ready to go. And then we've got a skeletal horse foot outside of Winterfell. So here they come.
Yeah. So we're definitely worried about all of those people down there. Yeah. Jorah, Brienne,
Pod,
James. Pod. That's it. Oh, yeah, that's the whole trailer. Okay, cool. All
right, so, good.
Excuse me. So the thing that we feel like they most definitely deleted is Jon riding a dragon, right?
Yeah.
Anybody riding a dragon. Because I think, yeah, those shots well, are going to be
one
both
of them. Like, the shot where it's from behind the dragons, they're flying down, you can see Daenerys on Drogon.
Yeah.
And
just no one on Rhaegal.
Little yeah. motion blur on go. Top of Rhaegal. We'll yeah. call it Motion Blur Snow. That's his new name.
Sure.
He's so motion blur.
I think I could be wrong, but I think that shot of Sansa is her seeing Jon and Daenerys ride the dragons versus right. seeing the dragons for the first time.
And this is also, they literally ride the dragons. It's no longer a euphemism.
Cute. what did you say, Dave?
Oh, that's a dumb way to approach a city.
Yeah.
Just to have your dragons fly over them first. Like, it just in medieval, anyway.
Right, they're riding in. Like, we know that they're riding in. So I think that, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, they're going to walk up. They're going to be like, time to go to the dragons. And they're going to walk to wherever they park the dragons. And the dragons have obviously
been feasting. Or do you feel like maybe this is like an end of episode one type of thing? Like, this is the big moment. Jon gets his dragon riding license.
Well, I think it's after Crips, because after talking to Bran, because knowing who he is, and he's like, why not try it? And
then yeah. he does. And well, if we're related, I guess I can climb up on that other dragon.
Here's a theory that I floated to friend of the pod, Cameron Pro, when we were just sort of like spitballing ideas a couple weeks ago, when I was rewatching the pilot, and I was like, okay, how closely can they mirror the pilot for the first episode? And an idea I had was like, well, season one, episode one ends with like Daenerys's wedding. So what if we get a Daenerys and Jon wedding in season eight, episode one? I think
ended with Daenerys. It didn't end with Bran getting pushed.
Not like the final shot. I just mean like it.
In general, what happened?
Yeah.
First episode of the new season. Jon tries to ride the dragon, falls terribly. We cut.
Sam pushes Bran out a window. Yeah.
Someone just pushes Bran over.
Bran gets up, is the Night King. Anyway. So we think they deleted Riders.
I think if that happened, I'm just saying this for the audience. If that happens, I think Joanna is going to quit. Like if Bran stands up and he's the Night King, I think we just have to like throw it all out.
I'd like to announce the canceling of
we're all moving
seven
to the
episodes
woods.
Of Star Wars Sports.
Yeah, I'll move somewhere. I won't tell you where, so you can't find me and talk to me about Bran being the Night King. Anyway, so we think they deleted Jon riding the dragon, not euphemistically, but literally. And then we think that they deleted whoever's chasing Arya through the halls. A couple fun ideas there. One idea is that, the Night King will be raising the dead of the Winterfell crypt, and they will come to life, the Stark ancestors, and chase Arya. But like all of those corpses are pretty fresh or pretty old. And I just don't like skeletal, you know, whites very much. So I don't know how I feel about that, but like, and I really don't we were talking about this a little bit in the
there's one that could
Slack
come
today.
Back.
I don't
tease me, Neil.
I don't want a headless. Are you talking about Lady Stoneheart?
No.
No. You're
talking about Ned?
Who has died in the north.
Yeah, and recently like, had his recently throat slit fresh. And would be chasing Arya.
Wait.
Oh, Walter that would
Frey.
Be fun.
No,
wait,
no.
Who are you talking about?
I was talking about Hodor.
Oh. Yeah, I was talking about Littlefinger. No.
Oh, my God.
No.
We are so bad.
Neil. No, Neil, not Hodor.
Yeah, like, what's.
Oh.
In my mind, it's like the end of Ghostbusters. It's like, what's the worst thing? And it's fucking Hodor. Like, it's the thing that would never hurt Arya or anyone.
Well, I mean,
well, but Arya
anybody
doesn't have
who
a connection
dies...
to Hodor.
Well, maybe she's defending Bran.
But anyone who, but yeah, as Dave, I think, was going to say, anyone who dies in that battle.
Then immediately come back as a white.
A white. So one, another
white Brienne.
I think you guys are, but we're assuming the Night King survives this battle. We're assuming that this isn't just like, we're assuming the Night King is still around to raise people after this battle. Is that what we're assuming?
Yeah, yes. But you can raise people, like, you can, someone can die in that battle and he's immediately like, guess what? You're on my team now. Cause Karst doesn't have the Karst.
So you can do it all in the moment. Yeah.
So like, we're going to see this large battle. And
Game of Thrones loves to do it live.
A bunch of our favorites, as whites possibly, like, so one idea I had today was that, that it's the Hound. Because Arya made this promise in season four, I think it was, she's like, someday I'll shove a dagger through your eye, through the back of your head. And that's just like, so Game of Thrones to have her do literally exactly that, but like in a more tragic circumstance or whatever, right?
So wait, but then they just Clegane Bowl trolled everybody?
Oh, I definitely think they Clegane Bowl trolled everyone. I do. Even Hibbard was like, this was our attempt to have Clegane Bowl with that cover. So I don't know. Maybe there will be a Clegane Bowl, but I don't think so. Who knows?
Well, there's a lot of theories out there about the other side learning how to raise the dead.
But yeah.
I don't know how much. I don't know much. We just don't have enough time for that, I think.
Well,
or being
maybe.
Like John realizes that like he has the power to do it because he's like the other side. Like, is there a power up moment for John? Does he get more stuff?
I think
if he's the hero,
he gets a dragon. So that's the thing.
So yeah, he's leveling up.
Anyway,
but that's also interesting because in world Daenerys, there is magical elements to Daenerys. So will we learn in this season that there are magical elements to Jon because they're both magical Targaryen blood people? I don't know if we should rule it out, even if that sounds weird.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. We'll see.
There's things I can't
probably
say
not.
Because we're not in a storm section, but yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's right.
So that's the trailer. Did we miss anything?
How could we have missed anything? We went through at 0.25 speed and paused like four times. The last time you guys just kept playing without telling me to restart again, I had to catch up. actually, I do have a question. Somebody earlier on Twitter brought up that we see the hybrid Stark, Targaryen sigil on the soldiers behind Brienne. Mm-hmm. I can't tell because the trailer's dark.
And full of terrors.
And full of terrors. Full of JPEG artifacting terrors.
I can look at that again. I thought it was something else, but it might be the Starkarian. Sigil, maybe.
If it is, that plays just more into the ending with a marriage before the battle sort of thing. They have to have time to forge a new sigil.
And hammer it into a bunch of breastplates. It seems like a huge waste of time.
it looked like...
Hey, you never know. They're making all these obsidian weapons, apparently. Gendry's in charge.
Gendry's
like, why not look good while also doing it?
What are those? Yeah, that's super hard to tell what that is.
It's really hard to tell. I'm not saying it's not, but I'm also saying I can't quite tell. I mean, I know what that sigil looks like because they used it at their wrap party.
Yes.
So I've seen it, but I'm frame by framing this and I could not tell you for certain, but it doesn't look like another, you know, it doesn't look like it's definitely a direwolf or definitely Targaryen or whatever. So it could be that. Someone said, I think it was Alt Shift X who did, they're holding Knights of the, they're holding Vale, shields, right? They've got the Aaron sigil on their shields.
Ooh.
So someone said they were
Robin. Aaron.
Someone said they were Knights of the Vale. And so like maybe they're Knights of the Vale with Starkarian breastplates. Who knows? But,
yes, that's what I wanted.
Yeah, and to circle back to something Neil said earlier, or one of you said, when everyone, a lot of people are assuming that when Jaime says, like, I vowed to fight for a living, that's what I'm gonna do, that's him convincing Jon that, like, he should join the fight. But there are rumors that, Jaime doesn't go directly to Winterfell, that he goes around to some other places to pick up some people along the way. This is underlined by the fact that Tobias Menzies, who plays Edmure Tully, and I don't remember the kid's name, who plays Robin Aaron, are listed in the cast for season one, episode one.
Uh-oh.
The idea is that Jaime goes and gets Edmure and gets Robin Aaron and brings them to Winterfell. Not that they have a lot of people to bring with them, right? Like the Tully forces, you know, how many Tully men are left after, you know, being occupied?
And all the Knights of the Vale
are already at
Winterfell.
Winterfell. Right. So, Jaime shows up with Edmure, Robin, and like 10 muddy dudes.
But Robin's like super ripped warrior dude now.
Yes, he's like, been doing push-ups all summer.
He should, but it's like how Bran got taller, but Robin got like musclier.
Yeah.
Swole Robin Aaron.
So there we go. So we all agree that we don't think there's anything in here that isn't, unless it's Cersei finding out that perhaps Jaime is dead, which is something we think is going to happen probably before the end of the season, given that Nicola Costa-Waldo was only paid for a couple episodes of Game of Thrones this season. That maybe that's Cersei finding out that.
I mean, that feels like a closing shot of a big battle episode where it's someone telling her what happened in the battle.
Yeah. So it's either way, her baby is no longer inside of her. She's drinking wine. So I think she's lost the baby, and either she's just lost the baby and she's upset and drinking wine, or she's lost the baby and she's found out that Jamie's dead and she's drinking wine. Either way, wine's back on the menu, boys.
So. Wine's
What's
back
crazy
on
is
the
that
menu.
There's, four full movie sized episodes after these that we don't know anything about.
Three.
Wait. No. Oh yeah. Three and three. Shit. Seven was last year. Why didn't they do 8 episodes for season 8?
Money. Money, 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 money.
Money.
No, wait. That's why they should have done it.
So that's Game of Thrones.
That's the Game of Thrones trailer.
I'm worried about a lot of people in that battle, Winterfell. So.
Yeah.
As you should be.
If
you, know
you
what you
kill
shouldn't
them
be worried about.
In a battle, you don't have to pay them. All right. What should I be worried about?
I mean, what you shouldn't be worried about.
Oh, okay. What's that?
Is the state of Neil and I's underwear situation.
Oh, right,
oh,
you
I've been
about
waiting
your
for this
are you
one.
About to, like, frame by frame take me through your underwear situation right now?
I mean, we could frame by frame take it through the underwear situation. I, at least right now, can say with 100% certainty, unlike things that we just said out the Game of Thrones trailer, I am wearing some Mack Weldon underwear. That's right, Mack Weldon, the premium men's essential brand that believes in smart design and premium fabrics. Mack Weldon will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants, and more that you will ever wear. And it's true, even though I'm really just into their underwear and socks personally. You go onto their website, it's very easy to use, it's very easy to find a size, everything fits like it's meant for you, and I mean that in a genitalia and foot way.
Okay.
In a very positive way.
No, we could have done without the word genitalia.
I really could have.
We're having
I
a
mean,
not,
I was,
not great. Personal clothing related jokes to this episode. It's bad.
All right. So, like I've been talking about, Mack Weldon. We did one of these previously. I talked about some Mack Weldon socks and underwear I ordered. I went and I re-upped specifically in the boxer shorts category and the boxer briefs categories. And they are absolutely my favorite, not only because of comfort, but they are now significant other approved. Notably.
Oh,
because,
okay.
Like, otherwise I wear, like, SpongeBob SquarePants boxers, and I think I'm embarrassing to be seen in a lounging situation. But I look good in these Mack Weldon.
So every
underwear.
Once in a while, Java's just glad to be dating an adult.
Exactly. She's like, I'm so glad that you're using Mack Weldon underwear instead of your own personal taste. So you definitely need to go check out the Mack Weldon. I also would recommend they have silver underwear and shirts.
Dave,
that are
the silver.
Yes.
The silver. Yes. Can we talk about the silver for a moment?
Yeah, I heard it whisked away moisture. That's what I heard.
So if you're having a situation where maybe you're wearing fleece, I think that's going to solve my ultimate issue, is that if I need to wear head-to-toe fleece at any point this year, I'll just wear Mack Weldon underneath it, and all the moisture will get wicked away or whatever. I'm not sure that's how science works, but I'm very confident in my Mack Weldon experience. That should lead me to being less sweaty next time.
So they have a guarantee that if you don't like your first pair, you could keep it, and they'll still refund you, no questions asked. So here's what you do. For 20% off your first order, you visit MackWeldon.com and you enter the promo code STORM at checkout. That's MackWeldon.com. Enter the promo code STORM at checkout for 20% off your first order. Mack Weldon, it's better than what you're wearing right now. Except for me and Neil, because we're wearing Mack Weldon.
Yeah, that's true.
I heard we were talking about a little indie film by the directors of Half Nelson called Captain Marvel today. Is that true?
You know what? It's been like 50 minutes. Let's talk about Captain Marvel.
Let's do it.
Well, I
Why
guess
the
this
F not?
To help people prepare for how long it's going to be when we have to talk about Game of Thrones. We're going long.
For sure. I think in this calm section, it actually is going to benefit us to use actor names if we want to talk about stuff. Captain Marvel is on its core a mystery action blockbuster with like a 90s flavor about a Kree warrior played by Brie Larson who goes to Earth in her attempt to win the war for the Kree vs. Skull War for the side of the Kree, and on her way there has to reckon with her non-existent memory of everything before her 6 years training as a Kree warrior.
You did it, bud.
Oh, okay, good. I thought you said dick butt, and I was like, A-plus meme, but also weird. Because the movie itself is structured with Carol on this mission, she's also figuring out things about her memory. The secrets to the plot are in her memory, which allows us to find out more about the character and about what was actually going on. So because of that, I think it's kind of weird to actually give everybody's character names. Even her calling her Carol at the beginning isn't technically accurate. That's how weird this movie sort of is. But I do think, personally, as the man, I get to go first, right? That's how this movie works. I enjoyed a lot of Captain Marvel's tone, especially after, I think, things like Infinity War, Black Panther, or Doctor Strange, which all were things that had a lot of expectations for introducing a character sort of quote-unquote mid-origin. Doctor Strange did it by, like, weirder ways. I really like the idea that you could tweak the Marvel formula just enough to make it like a tone piece and not necessarily have to tweak it entirely for it to be about the femininity of its lead character. Because of that, I think a lot of times this movie goes right up to the edge of saying, like, I'm specifically a movie about female empowerment, but also leaves it open so that people aren't going to be able to tag that as like a detractor, because I think it's about empowerment that happens to be with a female protagonist. And if we were used to seeing this, I don't think the conversation about the sex of the lead would be much of a conversation at all. That seems like a good controversial place to kick off this non-spoiler conversation of Captain Marvel.
Dave, can I disagree with something that you just said?
Oh, yes, please. Please do.
Sorry. I'm going to come in and Neil-splain something.
Yeah.
No, I think it's interesting that you brought up, sort of the tone of it. And I think, what surprised me is, not that it's a different tone from the movies you mentioned, like, Black Panther, Infinity War, it doesn't have that sort of, weight to it, but I do think what's really interesting about it is, you know, it's a movie set in the 90s. It has a very like 80s, 90s, like energy to it. And there's
like an action.
Yeah, there's a certain thing about the action movies at that time is they were always like one long chase scene or, you know, a road trip, you know, running away from something. So they had this like propulsive momentum at all times. And I think that a lot of people could walk away from Captain Marvel and be like, yeah, it's good. It's one of those funny Marvel movies. And honestly, when I saw it, I was like, this is like the most sort of militaristic action movie they've made since, I don't know, maybe Iron Man. Whereas like, if we look at the Captain America movies, it's like a different sort of thing. So I found that its energy is really interesting, and it felt that, that was the most important part to me about like making a movie that's like set in the 90s. So yeah, so I like that, but I am curious to hear what Joanna heard or thought of this film.
Okay guys. I really liked this film a lot.
Was it Captain Marvelous?
Yes, it was Captain Marvelous. no, I was really apprehensive about this film, because I don't know, the trailer just looked, fairly low key to me. And, I felt like there was a lot riding on this, as there was with the last female led superhero movie that we got. And, you know, I was concerned despite my love for the source material. And my, you know, I thought the cast was good and the directors are good, but I was really worried. And then I saw the movie and I walked out of it and I was like, that was fine. And then I thought about it and I was like, no, that was better than fine. And then mm-hmm. I talked to some people about it the next day and I really, 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 really liked it. So, nice. Yeah, I wound up just like really loving this movie. It really, really stuck.
Can I ask you something about the trailers? Cause yeah, this is something that popped to me was when I watched that first trailer, it felt like a lot of the line delivery, a lot of the dialogue, it was one of those trailers where it felt like they were pulling dialogue from different scenes and putting it over other scenes to sort of create the vibe they wanted. And a lot of the deliveries from Brie Larson were like weird, like weirdly like flat. And then, when I saw that dialogue in the movie, it was completely different. Like it was in different contexts. So there was this weird thing about the trailer where I was like, am I like reading something wrong, or is like Brie Larson not trying very hard at her dialogue? But then you get it in the movie and there's none of that. She goes back. She, you know, delivers the just fantastic performance that we're used to seeing from her. So it's that first trailer that like stuck with me. And I was always like, I don't know what was going on there.
Well, it's funny. I was talking to Lashana Lynch, who plays Marie Rambeau, and, I was like, I think I really liked this movie, which is true. I was like, but I think it's hard to market it because it's hard to, you know, really nail down exactly what it is. It's a lot of different things. And she was like, in that way that like, you don't really want to hear any criticism about this thing that you've worked so hard on. She was like, I don't know about that. And I was like, oh, okay. But anyway, that was like my initial instinct, because I was like, this, you know, like, Thor Ragnarok, I think it's so easy to pluck out what Thor Ragnarok is and cram that into a trailer and throw it up there. Avengers Endgame and Infinity War, same thing. Like, but this, the tone, it's not like the tone is all over the place. It's just like so low key in places. And yeah. That's the Fleck and Bowden, you know, effect, right? Like there are parts of it that are just like low key human drama, just surprisingly. When you have, even though Ben Mendelsohn is like full green, you know, makeup or whatever, like that there's just this low key poignancy to it. Interestingly, it doesn't clash with the big space epic stuff, but it's hard to convey in a package that you air on a commercial break, you know?
I have a theory that I've just come up with about maybe why they went there with this. But go with me for a second. Because one of the things that was interesting to me about Captain Marvel was not any of the stuff that people are yelling at me online about. It was Marvel is putting a new piece on the board of their universe. And it's not like other pieces. You know, putting Captain Marvel, a fully formed version of Captain Marvel from the comics, into the MCU is like throwing Superman in to the DC. You know, it's like, that's the kind of shit we're talking about here.
I'm glad you made that comparison before I made that comparison.
Well, I walked out of this movie and I was like, oh, sweet. It was Top Gun Superman. I loved it. But I think that it's interesting because when you have a character that's so powerful, you can't have them. Well, the traditional Hollywood knowledge would be you can't start with that. Like, you can't lead with how strong and crazy strong she is. You know, she has to go through a journey, which is where smart writers, like Bodden and Fleck of Hoff Nelson, they sound very fancy to me as a duo. I don't know why. but like smart writers will go and they'll find like really good character stuff like they did here. And like, not smart writers will do, you know, more action or brooding and then like more brooding. So I think it's a really good, sort of formula or really just good thought experiment of like, you have this existing universe that exists for 10 years. And, the biggest problem is not that you're introducing your first like big female hero. It's you're introducing a character who will kick the shit out of literally everyone we've met so far. So
yeah,
it's a big deal. And I thought that was the thing that it does the best, which I really liked. So that's my theory. I think that's a theory. Might just be what I thought.
Yeah, I think if you want to stack this up against origin stories, which I think is the fairest thing to stack it up against, you know, Black Panther had somewhat of an advantage in that, T'Challa's origin story is buried in Civil War, you know, has its roots in Civil War.
Right.
So I wouldn't really call Black Panther an origin story. It's an origin story of Wakanda, but not really of T'Challa. And so then you have to think about Ant-Man, right? Doctor Strange, Thor, Iron Man, Captain America, right? Those are origin story MCU movies. Guardians of the Galaxy, but that's like
technically the Incredible Hulk.
Yes. in on a technicality. And so I think, you know, I'm trying so hard not to compare this to Wonder Woman. But it should be said that Wonder Woman got her intro before her origin movie too. But like, I will say this, rather than compare it to Wonder Woman, I will compare it to the movie I compared Wonder Woman the most to, which is Captain America, the First Avenger. And I think when you compare this to Captain America, the First Avenger, it is certainly like as good, if not, actually, I think it's way better. But I think that that's the level it deserves to be compared to, not, like Thor Ragnarok or some, you know, which people feel mixed on anyway, but like, I don't think it's fair to necessarily compare it to like recent MCU movies because it's trying to do something else.
Yeah. Cause I don't mean
to be like, that's not fair, but like, you know, I just think that that's the, you know, that's the base that we're coming from.
That's the reality of the situation is that these movies, a lot of them, they have different goals.
Yeah.
You know, Avengers, that's why I've always said like, the Avengers movies feel like season finales, less than just like their own movie. Whereas like this, the goal of this movie seems like we need to figure out how to get her in to the rest of this with a good story. And then she's going to be a big deal.
And I think that the, I don't know. Dave, what do you think?
Well, I mean, not only is it introducing like a powerful character, this is the prologue for where we're going after Endgame. Movies are going to be more like Captain Marvel going forward and less like Iron Man going forward. Just in terms of tone and weirdness.
What are those distinctions for you? What is
more aliens and shit?
We're going to be doing more aliens and shit. The whole idea of Iron Man having to reckon with its groundedness in the face of something like Thor, which was whatever, all that's off the table. The Marvel Universe is one gigantic sandbox with these hero pieces you could move around. And surprisingly, because Marvel's been so much about forward motion, they established a lot of that by going backwards. So we actually have 20 years of space stories we don't know about yet, where we leave Carol and Ronan and anyone else that we may see later in the MCU is not necessarily where we pick them up in the MCU that we know. And then especially throwing in a shapeshifter race that has existed this whole time just means that everybody you think you saw died maybe didn't really die. It's a really cool way of, I think, telling like a traditional comic book story, but then also seeding little trapdoors for yourself to get out of the traditional view of the Marvel cinematic.
We should have called this episode the Never End Games, because these are the end games that will never end.
No, I mean, Game of Thrones is going to end.
Uh-huh.
But Captain Marvel, I think you're completely right, Neil, in comparing it to putting somebody like Superman on the table. And I think that's also...
But that's a problem that they've had before, right? When they when they introduced Vision or Scarlet Witch and they're too powerful.
Yeah, it's a really, really hard thing to do. Yeah. Ask DC in literally every Superman movie. Because Well, I think we should probably talk about this in the Storm segment, if I'm being honest. I have more to say.
In terms of introducing a powerful character that is that powerful, and in terms of introducing conflict to that character, I think the problem is very often with like iterations of Superman that we got, he has to be his own problem, which just makes him like a whiny boy. Captain Marvel's not that. So I am very interested to see in the future what obstacles they're able to throw at her to keep her evenly
powered. Here's why. Because women aren't... I'm sorry. Women aren't allowed to whine. Every time a male superhero is whined about something, women aren't allowed to do that. It's like how Barack Obama had to be a perfect president because he was a black man. This superhero cannot whine about things that she has to do, and she doesn't. There's a part where she's worried she can't do the things that she has to do. That is... so female, I can't even effing tell you. But she's never like, oh, this thing I have to do. Like, she's just like, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, you know, that's part of that character. Like, there's something to her, and I don't think, this is another thing I don't feel like I got in the trailers. There's something in the way that Brie Larson plays her that is like, she's not messing around with these people. Like, she's not, she is a person of deep purpose. And that deep purpose is, I'm gonna kick everybody's ass all the time. And so it's like, you know, no, we need to go I have something to say. But we really need to go to the storm.
Before we hit the storm, I know our episode's running long.
I will come back to this, trust me.
Let's just hit like, one more spoiler-free thought, which is about how, and I said this on Little Gold Men already this week, and I'll probably say it again on the Slash Film cast, but like how scared I am about how good Samuel Jackson looks in this movie.
Yes, come to my side.
Samuel Polygon Jackson.
One day you'll be a Snoke apologist. Mark my words.
What are you talking about?
It's all the same facial technology. You're talking about mapping a younger face on an older face.
Snoke is not the same as this.
Yeah, I don't think that's the same.
Well, I mean,
bud.
Snoke isn't an existing face.
No, it's not. It's not
face.
A young... No. So how is it the same?
It's the exact... It's performance capture technology.
Performance capture technology? That's like saying, like, yeah, I'm down with all the ape shit. That's all great shit. Snoke still looks awful. Sorry. Anyway,
we'll get you there.
You will not get me there. This is not a step in that direction. If anything, this is like, why did Snoke look so bad when Samuel Jackson looks so great? I promised to introduce my theory about why Clark Gregg doesn't look great. And here's my theory. It's about hairline.
Mm.
We're quite used to seeing Clark Gregg with a receding hairline. We actually are quite used to seeing Samuel Jackson with no hair at all. I was looking at photos of him. It's like very rare to find him with hair at all in his career. There's like the fro in Pulp Fiction, but like other than that, you don't get much hair on Samuel Jackson at all. So the tight knit curly like hair that they put on him for this
you know, and the fact that, like, I would imagine, like, short cropped, African-American hair is, easier to animate than, like, long flowing white person hair would be a guess. I don't know if that's true. It seems true motion wise. They gave Clark Gregg this weird Tintin, poof in the front of his hair. And it looks awful, really bad. And then his face looks rubbery too. So, Clark Gregg, what a great guy. Here's my favorite thing that that came out of the junket that I went to for Captain Marvel is, like, someone had just interviewed Clark Gregg and she came back to, like, sit with me for a while she was waiting for her next interview. And I was like, oh, how was Clark Gregg? She's like, over it, but trying. I was like, oh, okay. So that's Clark Gregg.
I love that. And it's always at those big junkets, like the Star Wars or the Marvels, or it's always like the fifth or sixth build person who's like,
over
I'm just ready to get out of here, bud.
But trying. Oh no. And this was like the beginning of the day.
Yeah.
Like, he had not
no,
even,
No, I'm
like,
sure yeah. Clark Gregg is like, you know, I had a whole television series about the Kree once.
Yeah.
And someone's like, not even once, you're still on that. And he's like, wait, no, I'm dead. And it's like, no, you're not.
Oh,
anyway.
Buddy.
Yeah, right. And then he realizes that he sold his life rights away to Disney.
Our Storm section is going to be just all Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. all the time.
Okay, okay. My last spoiler-free thought is... Because I think it's built into a Marvel origin story now, and I wasn't necessarily sure until I saw a couple more of them, but it really is like 60% casting. Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, Paul Rudd.
Yeah, like
Evangeline
whoever's
Billy,
doing the casting for the MCU should get a Lifetime Achievement Award.
All
like
their
now.
First iterations are nothing. Like, they're just performance. And I think Captain Marvel is very similar. And I don't think that there needs to be more of Carol Danvers' character in there. I just like this portrayal of Carol Danvers is basically like
Me too.
A get shit done Brie Larson. And I'm like, cool. Yes, I'm into it. Like, bring it on. So I think if you're going to hear people besides us review this movie, you might hear that complaint. That complaint's not valid for me. I think there's perfectly enough Carol Danvers in this movie.
Any complaint is valid, and I mean, I just don't agree with a lot of... Well, no, that's not true. There's some trolls.
Any complaint in good faith is valid.
Any complaint from someone who has seen the movie with an open mind is valid to me. But I... You know, the whole trolling situation, here's the only thing I will take out. Cause like, I actually almost entirely successfully blocked out all of the trolling shit around this. Like it's useful to notice it because it's useful to notice how much some people in the world hate women. And I'm actually not even sure that it's true that some people in the world hate women that much. I think some people just want the attention that could come from them being a troll who hates women. So like, all of that is useful to know and be aware of, but it's not useful to engage in, I think, in like a one-to-one basis because you're not changing their minds about anything. So like, why talk to them? Why give them that much air? Why retweet their nonsense? Et cetera, et cetera. The people that I am a little bit more interested in engaging with are, you know, and there are friends of ours, film critics who disagree with us that this is a good movie. David Ehrlich, David Sims, Jordan Hoffman are a few of them.
When's the last time David Ehrlich was right?
David Ehrlich is right plenty of times. he's a good person and I like him.
I know.
The only thing that I don't appreciate from those people is the accusation that the only reason that to like this is to just be hoodwinked by anything led by a woman. And I just want to say on record that like, as someone who didn't like the Ghostbusters movie, I didn't like Jessica Jones, like that's not me. You can't hoodwink me just by putting a woman in the leading role. I'm not, I was like only mixed positive on Wonder Woman. My like love of this movie and the like really subtle messaging it has about women, is something else. So go ahead and accuse me of plenty of things, but please do not accuse me of just, you know, being here for anything that has a woman in the leading role, because that's not me at all. So,
well, and that's an excellent point. And I also have, a bit of, I guess, consumer advice for people who, you know, read film criticism. It's never about whether you liked a movie or not. It's always about how you explain your experience with that movie. and how you can connect that to the people that are reading it. So like, that's what you should look for in like really good critics. And that's why, even though we give them a hard time, that's why David Ehrlich's a good critic, because he does have the ability to do the explaining. It's when you stop thinking about that transfer of knowledge and experience and start thinking about it as like, this is like a weird team sport that people play, then you'll enjoy more stuff, I think.
You mean like when you stop being polite and start getting real?
Yes. Cool. Yes, definitely. Yeah. Especially if you're in a house with five strangers in the 90s.
Six strangers?
Oh, man. I'm a little disappointed that we didn't get a like a real world. No, that was later. Was that a 90s thing?
That was a 90s thing.
We'll talk Easter eggs in the next
Real world
segment.
San Francisco.
Yeah, let's finally go and talk about some specifics about Captain Marvel after this short break.
All right, so we've made it to the part of the show where we stop for a moment, collect our thoughts, and give thanks to some of the folks that support us on the small council of our Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers. These are some of the newer folks. We got Ian Conway, Erland Hulbeck, and then we've got folks who are not new, but are just as great. So we have Julie Sorrells, Delaine Mitchell, Amy Calhoun, Gretchen Lindensmith, Christina Sullivan, and Saquon Gatlin.
I also want to thank Matt Campbell, Joe Janka, Bryce Twine, Katie Salembier, Tom Whittem, Ira Storm, David Adams, and Annie. Thank you guys so much.
And I'd like to thank Sean Cosme, Megan McLeod, David Koplos, Fontanella. Oh, got it. Okay. Ryan Silberstein, Lily Lim, Melissa Slaughter, and Great on Toast.
Wait.
I don't think you got it.
You didn't get
Fontalea.
Fontale. I think it's Yves Fontale. I think.
Yeah.
Good job. Yves Fontale. I thanked not only the real person whose name I'm sure was correctly pronounced one of those times, but all the fake people I made up. Thank you, guys.
Thanked,
you make the show
possible. We thanked Eve through the multiverse.
Exactly.
I got it. You don't get it.
Damn. Ain't that just the way. And we're back to talk about Captain Marvel, Storm, spoilers. You should have at this point seen the movie where you can talk about anything we want. Neil wants to talk about the 90s references that resonated with him.
Well, I need to come back first to my point about Captain Marvel being super strong.
Oh, yeah.
And how I now respect the Guardians of the Galaxy less. So Ronan's in this movie, obviously. He shows up and then is pretty handily defeated but not killed. And the way Ronan is defeated in Guardians of the Galaxy, obviously, is a dance-off. Here's how you know Captain Marvel means business. She is not having a dance-off with this dude. She is like, I'm just going to destroy all of you.
What if I just go through
What if I just take your ship out with my like body? Body checking your ship.
Through the ship. Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, you really sort of have to put it in context, like how crazy strong she is. And that's why, I mean, I keep coming back to the Superman thing, and I know it's like going to super rile up a bunch of people on the internet, but I don't give a shit.
I don't think the Snyderheads listen to this podcast. I gotta guess.
But I mean, in this movie, honestly, and here comes the real sacrilege, you get the version of Superman that we've sort of always wanted. It's smart, full of purpose, funny,
nice.
Human in ways that you don't expect for someone who has like super strength and, you know, alien blood and whatnot. You know, that compassion, that universal compassion for like people and aliens and like whatever. And that's what's been missing from some of the more recent portrayals of Superman. It's not even just the last one. It's like the last couple. So I think that really was what struck me is like, you know, we have every right to criticize Marvel for waiting this long to put, a woman on the biggest possible banner at their premieres. But, I can tell why they wanted to work up to this particular character. Like, they probably should have done a Black Widow movie in that first phase if they really wanted to be cool. But, I can see why they would want to work up to Captain Marvel.
Yeah. I like, I like what you were saying about her being ultimate Superman, but in terms of what you're saying about her being the like first female lead of the thing, so much is done with her so subtly and it works. Like, one of my first thoughts coming out of the movie was, wow, they leaned on some weird ass shit for Black Widow and Wasp and Scarlet Witch, who all have to have weird romantic entanglements,
yeah,
or weird, very specific women only problems, to like even get into the relatable category with all our other male superheroes.
I love that Carol does not have a boyfriend, that Carol does not have like one single male that she is like in love with or lusting after, whatever. I mean, like that's a human part of the experience, and I hope she has one eventually. Maybe
she has a best friend and a mentor and a cat.
Yeah, and like and two and a good mentor and a bad mentor, three mentors
and a Sam Jackson.
Well, yeah, Sam. Well, I guess Sam's a sidekick. She's got like a sidekick in Sam, and Nick Fury. She's got a mentor in Annette Bening's character, and then she's got another mentor in Jude Law's character. But like, there could have been like a romance there, and there's not, and there isn't. How do you not have a romance with Jude Law?
Like, it's Jude
really
Law, like,
challenging, and they managed to do it. And
especially his first scene is he opens a door in a half open bathrobe and is like, oh.
And then they they sweaty fight, and it is for some reason not sexual. It's amazing.
Well, and I think what you've exposed is sort of the benefit of like, look at who is in the writer's room for this movie. You know, half of the directorial team was women, and what was it, like 4 out of 5 writers on this project were women. So like, it feels like that old style of just be like, all right, well now these guys got to have a little sexual tension. Would, you know, that's the kind of idea that gets thrown out early in a room like that in 2019 or whenever they made this movie.
Yeah. No.
All right. Back into spoilers. Best Stan Lee cameo.
It's like the cutest Stan Lee cameo.
Why are people mad about it? It's adorable.
Wait, people are mad about it?
I don't know. Are people mad about it? I assume people are mad about it.
Why would they be mad about it?
I saw somebody talking about it, on Twitter vaguely as like, it was like, it's dumb because it's Kevin Smith related, but I think that's more about Kevin Smith than Stan Lee. I love Stan Lee.
I think it's more about it being 1995. Yeah.
Stan Lee. Also, that's a great callback to like one of the first moments of my awareness of who Stan Lee was when he was in Mallrats, and I saw it when I was like 13.
Yeah, me too.
So I liked it. I liked the 90s, you know, the 90s kid stuff was all very well done, even though I guess you could nitpick some of the music, as I'm told. But,
I could have done without some of the, like, isn't it hilarious that the internet used to be so slow? Like,
didn't
really matter to me. Or like the Radio Shack. I was like, oh, it's a Radio Shack joke right before they panned a Radio Shack. Like, I didn't really care for that. And I really didn't care for I'm Just a Girl Playing. Like, that is the worst part of the movie. And
weird.
Everyone I've talked to has agreed that that is the worst part. Even people who really like this movie are like, what the fuck is that needle drop?
Well, there's some on the nose stuff. Like, there's I think they use the Nirvana song really well. Like, that's a weirdly perfect time for that to happen. Like, as you're setting up the confrontation.
I liked all the other music for some reason.
The garbage song when she steals the, motorcycle is a pretty good spot.
I liked it too.
Yeah.
The No Doubt. Part of it is because like Gwen Stefani betrayed all womankind with what she became, but also like it's just
I'm excited about though. I'm excited for some angry fangirl online to go in there and pull that scene out and recut it with different music and make it
like
10 times better.
Fight. Yeah, yeah. Seriously, so, it's a bad song choice. It's so stupid. So
you want to know my secret shame of Captain Marvel?
Did you like that song choice?
I ordered a large Dr. Pepper and really needed to pee, but I was like, no, I need to go through all of Captain Marvel, even if I'm about to pee my pants for this post-credit scene. The I'm Just a Girl needle dropped happened. I'm like, I could pee pretty fast. And so I went and peed. And I came back. They were still fighting. Things seemed to be worked out fine for Dave, but Yeah, I got back just in time to see Talos take shapeshift into a Kree. So I don't think I missed any of the key plot points.
Nope, you did not.
No, you didn't. And actually, that you could almost cut. I get what they're going for with the song choice and her. It's like the start of the fight between her and Jude Law. But there's a lot of like logistics that don't work in that scene. Like, how does Jude Law go from like, being beaten up to being like in a different room?
I agree. It's a little messy right there.
Yeah,
there's a lot of the action in this movie that's messy, and it's forgivable because most of it's enjoyable. Yeah. But it took me a second to figure out if I liked the decision to set first action set piece on Dust Planet. Because, okay.
It's so disorienting, but like, that's what something I've decided was intentional, but maybe it wasn't. But everyone I've talked to is like, I didn't know what was happening. And I'm like,
And then the laboratory is lit horribly across the board. I don't know what they were doing and why they didn't fix that in post-production. I could see what they're trying to do, especially when they get close to the fight and they have like the green swords against the blue, whatever matter thing that's spinning up. Like, then I get what they're going for, but for the parts in between that, where they're finding pieces of action shots to string a sequence together, really poorly lit. But, you know, that doesn't make it a bad movie. It's just, I think I should try a little harder,
occasionally. The Marvel action is often messy, to be honest with you.
It's true. Remember Gumby Black Panther?
I think it's the difference between, like, directors that are used to working with the whole previz style, like, Joss Whedon with the Avengers final fight, and then, you know, independent filmmakers who are like, we're gonna do this movie as a movie we want to do, and are learning that as they go.
Yeah, that's a good point, because this is sort of exactly the level of like thoughtfulness I would expect to get from a superhero movie written by the Half Nelson crew, and probably about the level of like action choreography and direction that I would expect, because, you know, the Marvel machine lifts you up as a director, You're right. There's a lot that has to go on set. There's a lot of planning. You kind of have to know, which I think is sort of one of the more underrated things about the Russo brothers, is like that language, they speak it. And that's maybe why they've gotten along so easy. That's not to say that what Bodden and Fleck did here was bad. Like, it's a really good, it's really well done. And I think that
Bodden.
I don't
know. Okay.
I'm sure I got it right this time. One of my other like things that is growing on me more and more is how in a film where every shot of Samuel L. Jackson is a digital effect, they committed to Ben Mendelsohn being able to act like a Star Trek actor through that thick makeup, and he rises to that occasion.
Oh man,
Ben Mendelsohn's so good.
He's so good.
And then I'm also happy that he could be back.
Yeah.
Ben Mendelsohn Skrull's on stage.
Yeah.
He's the most notable Skrull. If Ronan's the most notable
Kree.
Or Ronan and Annette Bening are the most notable Kree. Oh, yeah. And then also the idea to make the Supreme Intelligence whatever it wants to be is really smart.
Yeah, that's great. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it was like a brilliant way for them to hide. Like, I remember when Annette Bening was cast, and everyone's like, Annette Bening cast as, I mean, I think fucking Variety wrote this, Annette Bening cast as Carol Danvers' mother in Captain Marvel. I'm like, fuck you. She's both the supervillain AI and the, like, superpower in Captain Marvel. So,
well,
like,
it's an interesting construct if you're going to have a superhero movie that has to deal with, you know, like, basically, it's like she's dealing with trauma for most of the movie, which is she can't remember her past. And then it's like, you know, and so I think that that's a really interesting, I mean, she goes to Supreme Intelligence and it's like, here's a therapy scene. So, I think that's a great way to sneak in some real shit into a movie that's about a woman who can fly through space and punch spaceships.
Well, but it's, but it's like, it's this extreme gaslighting. Like, basically she was picked up by the Kree and then like, brainwashed and gaslit, and like everything that is it Yon-Rogg?
Yon-Rogg. I don't think they say his name until after the reveal that he's evil, because if you are a comic book fan, you immediately are like, wait a minute,
Yon-Rogg.
The Kree are all assholes.
Yeah.
These are all villains.
Yes, they're all
bad guys.
What are
we even doing here?
Gemma Chan, you might have missed Gemma Chan's moment when you were in the bathroom. I don't know if you did. I can't tell if I like it, but they're fighting and Bree's like, oh, is this why we never hung out? Because you're evil? And she's like, no, I just didn't like you. She's like basically a Kree mean girl, essentially. Anyway, Gemma Chan, like, a little wasted in this movie, but looks great in that makeup. But yeah, everything that Jude Law says to her about, and like, maybe this is why I like the movie more than, like, a lot of people like the movie. Everything that Jude Law says to her about her emotions. I mean, I knew that Jude Law was evil in this movie because, Dave told me months and months and months ago, basically. But like, as soon as he started telling her, like, oh, there you go with your emotions again. You just can't control them, so, can you?
Two,
I was like,
two minutes into this movie, you were like, oh yeah, Jude Law's the bad guy.
It's like, fuck him. Because like, that is, but like, I think it's well done because I think that is, could be a lesson. It's like, you need to control your emotions in order to be an effective fighter. But I love that the message of this movie is women, I'm just going to say women, don't be afraid of your emotions. People will tell you your entire life that it's a weakness. It's a strength. Use it.
Right.
And like, that
believe in yourself, your
not
own
just, like,
power.
Not just, well, okay, no, wait, wait. Not just believe in yourself and woman power, because that's reductive. It's like,
well,
that's not a message
part
you
of
get
it.
A
it's
lot.
Like an element
that's,
of it.
But that's not a message you get a lot, is like, your emotions are not your weakness. They're your strength. That's just like, because I think oftentimes with like, girl power or whatever, it's like, be Furiosa, be like, be manlike. I love Furiosa, but that's like, be manlike and you're a cool lead.
Yeah. Well, no, to me, it's like the next level of that. Like, the first level of it is like, you know, have confidence, believe in yourself. The next level is like, don't be afraid of who you are.
Well, this is what I was trying to communicate with my opening topic, which was that I think Joanna's right, but I think Neil, your interpretation of it is coded into the movie so you could read it that way if you don't want to touch
it's
feminine specific.
It's a very smart movie.
I absolutely believe what Joanna's reading.
A smart movie.
Right. The way they weave all of it in. I mean, it's funny. I had this similar thought about like the gaslighting thing and like how that feels. You know, it's a universal thing that could happen at any time in the world, but that felt real. Like that, it's like, oh, I get it.
Well, it's both a like a pulp storytelling trope that men have seen recycled, you know, in a bunch of superhero movies, and something that's talking very specifically to women. But it isn't excluding either of those people in that conversation, which is, I think, like the genius of Captain Marvel, and why I think it like has that power that Joanna was talking about, where it grows on you. You come out of it and you're like, that was really fun. I didn't see Spider-Man die in that one. I didn't know that's what I wanted, but that's what I wanted.
There's fun stuff with a cat. You know, like when people came out and their main reactions were like, Ben Mendelsohn, like out of the LA like junket screening, because the New York screening was a bummer. Like those guys all walked out of it not liking it, I guess. But like the LA screening with like the junketeers and stuff like that, who were really high on the movie, they were like, OMG, the cat's so cute. OMG, Ben Mendelsohn is amazing. Both of those things are really true. But then the movie has a lot more to offer, I think, if you let it sit with you, you know?
Totally.
And
so here's,
no, I just wanted to say that, like, I think the space that Marvel let, Fleck and Bowden have, with the more emotional beats, I'm thinking specifically of like Maria Rambeau at the table, like crying and talking about how hard it was for her to lose her friend. You know, I talked to Lashana about this and she was like, oh, I was sure that was going to get cut in a big Marvel movie. I was certain that was going to get cut. And the fact that this movie has room for that is just, I think, incredible. I think it's like, you know, I really respect Kevin Feige and, you know, Victoria Alonso and Louis D'Amato and all those people for just being like, yeah, okay, we can do this. We can put this in our movie. I mean, similarly, it's the same way I felt when I came out of Black Panther. I think Black Panther is a good comparison, where like, I liked Black Panther. I think it operates on like 9 different levels that are good for like common consumption. And then there's another level that all of us on this podcast, maybe Dave a little bit, but not exactly, can't touch, which is like the Black experience in the world that we don't have, that we can see it maybe in this film, but like can't feel it the same way that some people watching that film can. And it's there, that layer is there, but it's not essential to your understanding of the film. And I think that same thing, that's what Dave was saying about Captain Marvel, is like that deeper core layer of the female experience is there. And since you guys are awesome allies, I believe that you can see it and can feel it, but maybe not feel it exactly the same way that women can. And that's okay. Yeah. Like, there's nothing wrong with you.
Fair enough.
I will definitely say that seeing yourself on screen is an individual thing for everybody. So yes, you're completely right. There are things that I think are coded into every movie about who it's really for, but especially things like Black Panther and Captain Marvel that have to play in the blockbuster sphere and pretend like they're for everybody. And I think the way that both those movies dealt with it is super smart.
So when I walked out of Black Panther and like, when you walk out of Black Panther and you're like, I cannot believe they let those be Killmonger's like final words in Black Panther.
Like, oh shit, this is
crazy. Shit, this is awesome. That's how I felt walking out of Captain Marvel too. I was like, I can't believe they let certain things happen. And that's just like, that's a cool thing that Marvel is doing with its power. You can be scared of Disney in the way that it's threatening to swallow the world. But in terms of like what Kevin Feige and his folks are doing at Marvel, they're like, not only do we want world domination, but we don't want like dumb, fun world domination. We want to say something with these movies too, which I think is both. Yeah. You know, a smart way to get people engaged and, like genuinely, I think they're storytellers, honestly. So,
yeah. And it's I think it's an interesting balance. And this might be sort of the crux of what makes Marvel stuff really work is they are both not following filmmakers around in the dark, letting them be led. They're not being led by filmmakers around in the dark, but they also are not, from what we can tell at this point, they're giving space to really smart filmmakers and they're doing all kinds of weird shit with it. It's great.
So my greatest hope for a future Marvel movie is the Nova movie, which has Glenn Close staring down a AI Annette Bening and a Ronan the Accuser who only got into a dance-off because he was a Skrull with the Guardians of the Galaxy and is totally alive, facing off against a little child Nova. I want it so bad. I want these two space badass ladies with their empires of conflicting views to use little male puppets pieces. At this point, Lee Pace should just show up as the B bad guy in like five more Marvel movies. I'd love for that to be a running joke.
What did you make of the line that he had where he was like, "We'll be back for the weapon, the woman"? Like, what do you make of Ronan's involvement in Carol being away from Earth for so long?
Do you think
there's a payoff for that, or do you think that's just like a throwaway?
No, I think there's a lot of there's a potential and a lot of payoff for that. Like I was saying, that Ronan isn't dead. So we don't know the idea of what the Kree, the Skrull, are even exists, but at some point, you know, what's supposed to happen that we learn by Guardians of the Galaxy is the Kree and the Nova Corps sign a treaty to end some hostilities, and Ronan doesn't like that, so he kind of goes on like a ethnic cleansing purge of the Nova Corps. And then he dies when he touches the Power Stone, or when the Guardians blast him away with the Power Stone, or at some point during this large war that's intergalactic with shapeshifters.
I don't like that.
Lee Pace is still around.
Or
I think
at the
Lee
end
Pace
of
can
Infinity
be around
War.
For like movies between Guardians and Captain Marvel. But I don't like, oh, that wasn't actually Ronan. That feels cheap to me.
Well, then he could just be somewhere else because
what if,
Red Skull
but what if somebody gets the power glove and like resets the whole thing at the end of Endgame?
I like that you just called it the power glove.
That's the best. That's the best name for it.
Power glove.
I know
is
what
so
it's really
bad.
Called.
No, I know. Of course, no, I know you know.
Here's my
Neil,
other big question.
It's called the Infinity Gauntlet.
Okay, so at the end of this, Carol punches Ronan's ship and he goes down. So he's not that tough anymore. So in the post-credit scene, we get, you know, she shows up after being summoned.
Oh yeah, do we think that's actually going to be an Endgame? Do we just see Endgame footage?
I mean,
yeah. Absolutely.
Because they did that same thing with Captain America.
Captain America, First Avenger. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, with Bucky with his arm in the thing.
Oh no, I was thinking
First
Avenger.
Can I say that I'm already
too.
Very worried about Carol's hair and Endgame?
Well, she's been away for a long time and she has a lot of explaining to do. She's allowed to have a different haircut. I think that's the only way they're communicating that it's like future Carol. It's like her hair's
her roots have grown up. Yeah.
Well, I was hoping that she would have a different haircut.
I think it's so that she could have a more badass and pronounced mohawk in Endgame.
God, she's just a huge, that was like, my Little Pony
my
mohawk.
My first thought was, oh, she's going to have like the full mohawk in the next one.
I would love it if they give her some sort of crazy mohawk battle design.
Here's what,
yes, I'm into it.
I don't think I'm dumb, but maybe I'm dumb, but here's how I felt about that Endgame, what we think is Endgame footage. Is I gave like a gasp when Black Widow turned around and Captain Marvel was there. Not because I was like surprised that Captain Marvel was in this scene, because like, you know, I knew she was going to be, but to see these two women share the same frame, like something about that made me gasp. And like the reason I was kind of dumb for a second, I was like, oh my God, the first time that two, and then I was like, no, wait, there's been Scarlet Witch and like the Wasp and like whatever, like calm down. But like Scarlet Witch has been, with much love to Lizzie Olsen, like Scarlet Witch has been something of like a bleh character the whole time.
We'll find out all about her in the Disney Plus streaming series.
Honestly, though, this, like, what you're getting at, I think goes back to what I was saying, where it's like, even this whole scene is sort of built around the idea that like she operates on a different level. Like she shows up, she sneaks up on characters she should not be able to sneak up on.
Yeah.
So like that's how, the way I read it was like they're going to look at her and be like, oh shit, like what's going on here? Like, cause she's not the same kind of hero, which I think does raise her to a different level, but especially by the end of this movie, where it does feel like more powerful, that it's like, oh, these are two characters. One that we know is just a straight killer who's survived this long. And the other one who we just found out fucking rules.
I know that like Scarlet Witch has been around, but like there was that whole sequence. I think it's in Ultron, right? Where it's like, where Black Widow goes like, oh, I'm always cleaning up after you boys or something like that. Like there was just so long that it felt like Black Widow was just like the only one, you know, I don't know if I just keep like mentally blocking Scarlet Witch from things, but like to see her come face to face with Carol, I was just like, oh my God, Natasha and Carol, that's fucking rad. You know?
I also feel like Scarlet Witch doesn't become like a full, she doesn't really get a full storyline until Infinity War. Like Ultron isn't really about boyfriend. and that's part of the problem that, you know, we were talking about. It's part of the reason why Captain Marvel feels so like fresh and different, is like, if we look at the way they've handled Scarlet Witch, it's like, yeah, they really didn't give her a whole lot to do until they did the story where she falls in love with Vision, which they only did for like 30 minutes. So
I mean, allegedly she's like the whole Civil War is kind of a little bit over her, a little bit, you know?
Yeah, a little bit. It just felt like her and her brother in both of the movies they show up before, they're like MacGuffins almost.
Well, that's definitely true in Ultron, but in Civil War at least, you know, like the desire to contain and control Wanda versus the desire to protect and defend Wanda. Like, yeah, maybe that just makes her a MacGuffin. Speaking of which, should we talk about the Tesseract at all? I had to do a Tesseract timeline for my own self. I was so confused.
Do your Tesseract timeline.
I was so confused.
it was fun getting like bits and pieces from Joanna before she understood the timeline. She's like, all right. I'm like, cool. What are like the big things? You're like, well, Annette Bening is, you know, Mar-Vell. I'm like, cool. You're like, there are two Tesseracts. I'm like, wait.
Sometimes I'm stupid. because I thought I misunderstood in the movie, and I thought that they were claiming that Mar-Vell had built the Tesseract, but really she built the engine that was like run by the Tesseract, right?
Yeah, she,
right. She harnessed its power.
Yeah, she like cloned it.
So here's how it goes, and I've made GIFs of all of this. They'll be up on vf.com, but I went through and watched all the movies with the Tesseract in it for just the Tesseract parts. So the Tesseract was the jewel of Odin's treasure room, right? And then it somehow found its way to Earth, and it was hiding on Earth for a long time until Johann Schmidt, the Red Skull, digs it up in Captain America, the First Avenger. And he has this great line where he says, "It's a Fuhrer digs for trinkets in the desert." but at the end of that movie,
which is a lot of Indiana Jones shade.
It's like so Raiders. It's not even funny. And, you know, and then the Tesseract at the end of that movie, we find out later from the Red Skull, it cats me out, banish me here. It like banishes Red Skull off the earth into the galaxy. But like what we find out about that is that the Tesseract can move between worlds. It's tremendously powerful and can move things between worlds. Then, Steve crashes his ship with the Tesseract in it into the ocean. Howard Stark fishes the Tesseract out, and is studying it. And that is what the joint dark energy mission and Project Pegasus are about, an attempt to understand the Tesseract and its powers. Presumably Howard gave the Tesseract to Annette Bening's character, Mar-Vell, to study, how it might work. And the Tesseract, you know, that engine exploded with all the like blue goo Tesseract power, gave Carol Danvers her powers. Then yada, yada, yada. They find it in a lunchbox and Goose swallows it. The Flerken Goose swallows it. And then in the post-credit sequence, sometime in the '90s, still Goose vomits the Tesseract back up, which is how it ends up in that like underground bunker. We see it at the end of Thor, the first Thor, where, Nick Fury says maybe it has unlimited power. And Loki says that's worth taking a look at. And then, Loki uses the Tesseract to come to Earth, the Avengers. At the end of the Avengers, Thor and Loki use the Tesseract's power to go back to Asgard. They put the Tesseract back in Odin's treasure room, where Kate Blanchett's character goes, that's not bad. And then Loki steals it, and then Thanos gets it from him and crushes it. And at the center of it is a space stone, which is now in the Infinity Gauntlet. What's interesting to me, I'm sorry, I know that was too long, but what's interesting to me is how much Loki's, I hadn't really thought about how much Loki's fate is tied to this. Like the fact that at the end of Thor, you know, he's already like occupying Selvig a bit, Eric Selvig, and he's like, you know, that's worth taking a look at. And that thing, that Tesseract, is part of what ends him too. I think that's slightly poetic for a MacGuffin usage. So.
And then Captain Marvel's what brings him back?
I think Loki's just dead.
Okay.
I know he's getting his own TV show, but I like to think that that is all going to take place before his death. I really want
after someone uses the gauntlet like
to reset the whole universe. I think honestly, if I were a storyteller, if I were creating
cheap.
That's the most fun way to restart the MCU with MCU levels of people actually not dying. Being able to recast things. I don't know. Then maybe
you think
all
it's
the
restart
X-Men show up at the
like,
end or some shit.
And
I don't
like,
know.
Steve gets to have his dance with Peggy.
Yeah, like stuff like that. And like Tony Stark never gets captured, but he turns out to be a pretty good guy anyway. I don't know. There's a lot of dumb stuff that
like,
you come up with.
Like for the supers to retire in a way that like isn't.
Yeah,
everybody
or
dies.
It just resets and then it's like Stark Tower and there's
but
just
Thor
like,
is still Thor.
There's like a young woman working in Stark Tower and her name is Riri or something. Like, and it's like just like there was no Tony Stark. I don't know. There's like all kinds of fun ideas.
Is there anything else that we should note from that endgame footage that feels like Easter egg things you might have missed worthy?
There was they show like a pan over a screen that Steve Rogers is looking at, and there's like it's like, you know, billions missing, yeah, type of thing. Yeah. So, but I don't know if there's anything like specifically that I saw.
Paul Rudd isn't there.
Right.
And
right.
Scarlett Johansson's hair looks like it was not digitally treated and is still blonde.
Yeah.
Those
so
are
this
two things I wrote
this
down
feels like something that happens early
so
in Endgame.
You think Paul Rudd showing up, as we've long suspected, happens later after a time jump?
Yes, because I think what Thanos did affected the entire universe, so that's why Carol looks all pissed off. It's not that she got the signal, it's that she got the signal. She's been flying through what happened to the rest of the universe by the time she gets back there. And so she doesn't actually have the solution. Ant-Man has the solution. Carol's just the gun that could actually be pointed at Thanos.
Love it. Love all
of
that.
One more thing.
So when she fights Thanos, when she shows up to fight Thanos, what are they going to do with the other 3 hours of the movie?
that, like I was saying, Ant-Man has to go through time to fix. Anyway, we're going to have a whole mailbag episode about this before we actually get to talk about it, so we'll save it for that. But here's a question for you guys. In Iron Man 2, there's an extended scene. Yes, I watched the extended scenes of Iron Man 2. I have a problem. Where he is searching for information about temperatures on the planet Earth, and he says, he asked Jarvis to open the SHIELD database, the Pegasus database, the Goliath database, which, if you recall from Ant-Man and the Wasp, is Lawrence Fishburne's project that eventually used PIM particles, but for SHIELD, and Project Exodus. It is an acronym like the other two, E-X-O-D-U-S. Project Exodus has not been mentioned yet. So if we have in all of our SHIELD, secret SHIELD projects that are secretly other things, Exodus could be something else. I don't know what it is yet. It has the letter X in it, though, so you can imagine what the internet thinks it is.
Oh.
Iron Man 2, it turns out, after you see Captain Marvel, go back to Iron Man 2, it plants, like, five other movies.
Well, and that was always the funny criticism of Iron Man 2, is that, like, it was too heavy on the interconnectivity, and it was like, this is, like, your third movie,
Wakanda's
dudes, calm
there,
down.
The Pegasus and Goliath are there.
But shit, they really did it.
Nick Fury's there.
What's the project called in, Extremis? Is that the, like, secret soldier project?
From Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
All right.
So but I guess
definitely Exodus.
Deal.
And it's a project database that exists in SHIELD technology, as of, in the Ultimate Universe, humans made mutants is basically what the online theory is that Project Exodus, because it has the X in it, is going to be the back door to show that mutants have been there all along. That's a lot of stuff to think about. We've been talking about Captain Marvel and Game of Thrones for a while. Let's tell people where they can find more from all this, more of all this from us. Let's start with Neil.
Well, first we need to tell people what's happening next week.
Oh yeah, what's happening next
week? Which ties into that. So as you guys know, we announced last week we're going to have big Game of Thrones, Avengers. We're just going to blow it all out and see if we survive in April and May. But until then, we have a couple episodes left. In 2 weeks, we are going to be talking about Jordan Peele's nightmare films, which will include Us, which is coming out in 2 weeks. And then next week, we are going to do what I'm calling the last minute mailbag for non-endgame related things, which is if you have pop culture questions that you want us to answer about any of the other things that are going to happen in basically March, April, and May that are not Avengers Endgame or Game of Thrones, this would be a great time. I don't know if this is going to end up being a weird mailbag, but sure, that happens.
We haven't had a weird mailbag yet this year. Maybe it is.
So I'm just curious to see what y'all come up with. Obviously, you know, don't make it too weird. But, hit us with your questions, stormofspoilers@gmail.com, or if you are part of the Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers, you can hit us in the mailbag. There's a mailbag channel, right?
Yeah, on the Slack.
Yeah. That's why I was asking.
But it'll pop back up.
Joanna's very, very strict
tidy
about those.
Tidy
is the best
channels.
Word. You're right. Tidy. She's very organized with the channels. But you can put it anywhere in there. We'll figure it out. Right?
Yeah.
We'll
for sure.
Keep
going. Tell people where to find you online.
You can get me, filmschoolrejects.com, and on Twitter @rejects. Be doing a little South by Southwest party time and, seeing some movies. And I believe that this is the week that I'm going to, if I haven't by the time this podcast comes out, start my Game of Thrones rewatch from the beginning. So,
hey. And Joanna Robinson.
If you want to hear me talk about Game of Thrones, please check out Still Watching, Game of Thrones, that I'm doing with Richard Lawson. We are currently going through our top 15 episodes of Game of Thrones and interviewing some fun people from the show, directors, actors, producers, writers, et cetera, et cetera. So that's all leading up to the final season. Or you can follow me on Twitter @JoeWroteThis, or you can find me on VF.com.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter @DA70. You could find me on the podcast called Fighting in the War Room by searching Fighting in the War Room on your podcast app. And this is me telling you that even though I know some of you did fall this week, I'm with the rest of you. I'm with all of you. But don't fall down. Again. or the first time ever. Fly this space. Oh, make me over.